This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. It's pretty easy to get sandbagged by the enormity of what's happening right now, especially in Detroit, where multiple members of one family may be sick with COVID-19. Longtime friends and colleagues are claimed day after day. And on some days, even the youngest and strongest among us aren't safe. But one Detroit writer would put this to you in a slightly different way. Maybe the nature of Detroit is to find a way through such things. Jessica Caremore is a poet, a playwright, an artist, and producer. She recently published an op-ed for the Detroit Free Press whose title begins, "Detroiters Have Always Fought to Survive." Jessica Caremore, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
This beautiful essay that you wrote nods to Detroit's history as an engine of innovation. With some very specific things to say about the role that Blackness has played in that innovation.
This, you know, I grew up in Detroit, born and raised here, grew up on the west side, right on the Ward and Tyerman on the border of Dearborn, went to St. Al's and Dearborn, and then off to Cody High School for high school. And so I love this place. And my father was a very strong entity. He had his own construction company, and I was raised by blue-collar working parents, working-class parents, and the thing that's interesting about, you know, I have so many friends. Being an artist, you know people everywhere. So my friends in New York, you know, who have been sick, and my friends in Georgia who have been sick and fighting, and my friends in California. And so, but Detroit specifically being hit the way we have in the Black community, and I just don't think other people, after talking to my friends in other states and cities, understood the weight of what was happening here. You know, I was on Facebook, and Brandon Williams, who's a great drummer here, said that he knew 40 people that were dead. Yeah. 40. You know what I mean? And I haven't started doing my numbers, but it's probably, you know, at least about 25 to 30 around the country that are gone.
People you know.
People that I know, yeah. For sure, you know. And then if it's not people that I know, it's my friends. My friends have lost parents. My friend, my publicist, Biba, you know, God bless her, lost her mother, grandmother, and her aunt, like within 3 weeks. And so, you know, my best friend Charlotte lost her sister, who I mentioned in the article, Maria, who I've known my whole life, mm-hmm. since I was about 12. And so it's, you know, because so family is not just, you know, your blood relatives. You know, I'm blessed that my siblings, my blood siblings and my mother are fine here in Detroit. But, you know, the people that I love and consider family outside of my household and the people I grew up with are hurting dearly. And we just lost Mike Huckabee. You know, Mike Huckabee, I traveled to Wolfsburg, Germany with him. And we did a thing called Learning from Detroit, and it's to me very symbolic to what will happen. I think once this is over, and God willing, it will be sooner than later, is that people will be looking at Detroit to see what has happened here in our community and why. What are the reasons, you know, this community was affected? Not just by getting COVID-19, but not surviving it.
Yeah. For those who hadn't had the pleasure, Mike Huckabee was a DJ who was deeply, deeply involved in the community and a great artist in his own right. What parallels came to your mind about the things that Detroit has survived in the past and what is here and now?
I mean, you know, we've survived Ronald Reagan in the 80s invasion of that. We've survived, you know, crack cocaine. We've survived extreme plant closures that took families that were upper, more like middle class families into poverty in some families, mm-hmm. Or lower working class. And so, but I know that, you know, this is a strong town, you know, and we do, this place created the Black middle class in the country. We have homeowners, and you know, I moved back here after 12 years of being away in New York and Atlanta. And I saw, you know, my friends, family members houses I've been going to since I was a little girl, people were walking away from houses, losing their homes. And so here we are again in a space where everyone's, myself included, I own a home here in Detroit, worried about how to pay the mortgage. And even if the mortgage company's giving you a break for a couple of months, where is the money after the few months if you aren't working?
Well, what does self-reliance look like to you in this moment?
You know, just not allowing myself to cave in. Like the first week or two, the first call I got, my friend Nikki Barksdale, my childhood friend, had passed away. And the next day, my friend Marlo Stoudemire. And so I couldn't write. I wanted to just stay in the bed and I wanted to just cry. And I thought I deserved that. And at some point, and now with that, I'm online every day, sharing my work, doing my poetry. My book came out March 31st on HarperCollins. I had to pull myself together and know that I had to be here for the living and that I had to continue to somehow connect with audience, because audience needs art more than ever now. I know I'm listening for them DJs. I'm tapping into literary events. I want to hear from poets. I want to hear music. I want to be inspired. I want a distraction from the noise. And I realized that I had to be that person. Like, as much as, you know, I'm busy. I have a 13-year-old now that's home with me. He's in private school. So he is in school, you know, full-time on Google Classroom. He does actually still have instruction, unlike so many of our Detroit public school kids who don't. And I'm glad they're working on that. But, you know, just as a mother, you know, I have to pull it together for my kid so that I can't fall. I don't have the option of falling apart as much as I want to. And I still might. But in the meantime, writing this article, writing poetry, I've written a series of isolation poems that I'm enjoying it's just for myself, just to get me through the day. But that self-determination, at some point you have to, and I'm literally on, I really have a virtual tour. I have an Instagram show now on Tuesdays at 7, where I'm bringing other artists on. Omar Reagan comes on tonight with Mahogany Jones. Omar Reagan's a activist and comedian that travels all over the world, but he's raising money for food during Ramadan. Feeding the fast, he calls it. And Mahogany Jones, who's a great MC and artist. So I'm just trying to be a conduit for not just myself, but to like connect all these incredible artists that I know and people I know, to bring them, give them some space so they can talk. Because even moments like this, just talking to you on Michigan Radio, like all of it feeds me. As much as I'm like, oh my God, I'm so tired of being online. I'm so zoomed out. Yeah. at the same time, I feel good. After being able to share, and it makes you feel less lonely. You know,
you even find in this essay some beats that say things about the isolation and context for that. I'm just going to read a little bit of it. The children of the Up South movement who built engines, ate southern seasoned collard greens, and learned to nurse urban gardens before it became a thing. We are generally one generation away from Alabama, Mississippi, and Georgia, which means we are unapologetically Black. And despite our growing skyline, we are quite country.
It's with a K.
I know. It's such a different read about physical distance and isolation right now.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we are definitely Southern people. And I think that speaks to what's happening with COVID-19, because people are like, how do you know so many people that have passed? I was like, this is Alabama. Everybody knows everybody here. You know, I'm one out of three Black people. I kind of know them. If I don't know them, then my cousin knows them, my friend knows them. Everyone, the community is smaller than we realize here, right? We're, large in some ways compared to other cities. But when it comes to Black community, especially like the Black artist community, we all know each other. All the writers and the musicians and the painters, you know, it's just impossible not to know each other. And then the politicians, and I just end up knowing everybody. And so that's what that is, though, that very Southern hospitality, Southern growing up, like, you know, griot, information gets passed through, misinformation gets passed through, whatever, but it does pass through. But, you know, my daddy's from Madison, Alabama, which is a small town inside of Huntsville. And so that very Southern way of communicating is real here. And there's a lot of miscommunication early in the Black community about Black people not being able to get COVID-19, which is ridiculous, you know? And I'm like, no, that's not the truth. The COVID-19, everybody can get it. Everyone can die from it. But we really have to think about, and I talk about those Southern greens, which is great Southern food, but really thinking about as a community, what we need to be doing to make sure our kitchens are our medicine cabinets. You know, poor people need organic food. Poor and working class people, children deserve good fruit and vegetables and healthy stuff, not drive-through windows, which stayed open. And I was like, you can close those up because there's no way in hell we're going to the drive-through to feed us during the pandemic while this is something attacking their respiratory system. Do you think we need a burger and fries from McDonald's? No.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Jessica Care Moore. She's a poet, artist, and producer based in Detroit. Well, as you mentioned, you are taking care of your son right now and home with him every day. Yeah. How is he holding up?
He's driving me nuts. So he's just fine. I mean, you know, he's talking to his friends more than I want him to. Trying to balance it out. We've done a couple of days of yoga, mommy and son yoga. You know, we're trying different things. He's good. He plays piano, so he's here on his piano, and he's good. I mean, I'm okay, so he's okay. Yeah. And I think that's what it is. If I was in here, you're not cooking him all this food. All I'm doing is cooking. You know, all the moms. Oh my God, God bless the chefs, because I'm a personal chef. And I never had to cook this much, you know, because normally, you know, it's a breakfast out the door, go to school, pack a lunch. And now it's like, you know, he's hungry all the time. And it's just because he's in the house bored. But he's okay. I mean, he's frustrated. I mean, and that's what inspired the beginning of the article was his friends whose pictures are there, Kingston and Donovan, my neighbors who are lovely, who live right across the street. And they were like, well, we want to play. And so he was outside with this mask on, across looking at his friends across the street. And he was like, I want to go back in the house. And he was like, what is the point of me being out here?
Right.
And I was like, okay, King, you know, I understand. This got to suck for you. This got to suck for 13-year-old. He's in eighth grade. So, you know, there's no eighth grade dance. There's no, at least they got their trip into D.C., but everything else is gone. And hopefully we'll have some kind of a graduation ceremony for them, maybe in late summer. But, you know, so I'm having to, as a mom, give in to allowing, you know, things, staying up a little later at night than normal, you know, but his grades are fantastic online. They're better online than they were when he was in school. So he's very focused because he's home with me.
Do you think that this is more difficult for him as a, you know, someone who is in his own right, you know, something of an artist and trying to express himself? Or do you think it's harder for him just as a kid taking all this in?
I think just as a kid, he misses his friends. So it's been difficult. They're having like Netflix movie parties together and staying active on the phone, which is helping. But I know that he's sick of me. Probably poor thing. Like, you know,
Many households experiencing this phenomenon right now.
Yeah, he's probably like, you know, and though, you know, there's some things that I'm doing with him that he needed to. We have taken the opportunity to learn how to cook some food. So, you know, mommy is teaching, like, so that he can become more independent. We had a big discussion about that this morning, so that I'm not breakfast, lunch, and dinner, so that you can make yourself breakfast. You can make pancakes. So teaching him how to make himself something so that he can become more independent during times like this. But it's not easy. I mean, I told him to write about it. I mean, he hasn't yet, but before Thursday, I'm hoping that he'll write a piece about being in isolation. But my son is resilient. He's a pretty resilient kid, and he's very, very, like, I don't know. He's just kind of self-efficient, and I'm glad he's not really needy with me. I'm alive. King is healthy. I'm healthy. You know, my family's healthy. Like, that's the thing that keeps me going, and knowing that this is just a moment in time. It's not the thing that's going to hopefully define the entire year. I really pray that 2020 doesn't just become a blur and this horrible thing that just took beautiful people out with no light.
Jessica Care Moore, this grounding of history is the thread that connects the poem we just heard and the essay that you published recently. Yeah. You know, some people have looked at the history and looked at what's happening to Black families right now and all the disparities that have poured gasoline on the fire of the new coronavirus and have said, you know, this is not unrelated. Everything, you know, that everything is all connected. But has it been difficult for you to keep sight of the resilience, even as you see the history and everything that has been laid bare by this outbreak?
I mean, no, we're resilient people. You know, that's why we're still here. You know, we are, you know, the children of indigenous ancestors who were on this land first. We are deeply connected to the transatlantic slave trade. Many of our folks, you know, who fought to their way out of slavery, fought their way out of freedom so they can become people like Frederick Douglass. You know, I keep those ancestors close to me. Even ones who are younger, you know, like James Baldwin, you know, people who really fought for what was right in this country. And so we can't stop now. You know, it's not because a pandemic happened. I mean, the Black community in this country has been under the rock for way too long for what we've contributed to the country, from inventions to science to the medical profession to the frontline workers right now, who many of them are Black women, the nurses that I know, my friend Dr. Rob Gore is an emergency medical doctor in Brooklyn, who's working now while his wife is pregnant and having to be away from his wife so that he can help other people, you know, live. And so this is, you know, the heart and soul of who we are. And so we have to remain that, because that's why we survived. And that's why I exist, is because someone, great-great-grandmothers and fathers, they stayed alive.
Is it difficult as an artist right now to be in a place where you have to be that much more immediate with your work, and some of the consideration and some of the, I guess, self-curation is just not coming into play right now because everything is so, top volume and high speed?
Yeah, my issue is only that I'm not getting paid for my appearances the way I'm used to. And so I spoke to a couple of different friends of mine. They're like, yeah, I feel like I'm working more online than I was working offline, but not getting paid a third of what I usually get. And so that's the issue, is that so much, everyone kind of rushed to get online. And like, how do you compete with all the free stuff when I have a workshop masterclass that begins on Thursday. That's just $100 a week. But, you know, getting people to sign up for something for $100 a week for 4 weeks isn't easy right now.
Especially
right?
When there's rent to pay.
There's rent to pay. I can't even do it. I'm bummed that I can't go out and read. Like, when I get to read a poem in front of an audience and not a computer screen, I'm going to probably cry because my eyes hurt from having to be in front of this laptop so much or on my phone. But you know, again, it's what we're just doing, what we're supposed to do until we get to the finish line of this thing. And it's just a different way of approaching my art. I am writing. I wasn't writing, but I began writing. And the writing has helped me feel like I have some other purpose. And it's very reflective time, you know. And some days I just like lounge on the couch and look at movies and give myself permission to do that too, you know, to take a break.
If we can't do that, I don't know where that leaves us. Well, Jessica Care Moore, thank you so much for talking with us. Her latest book of poetry is We Want Our Bodies Back. And you can read her recent op-ed piece in the Detroit Free Press. We hope very much to see you in person on the flip side.
Thank you. See you soon.